Hi, all of you wonderful scuba divers out there. Welcome to the Scuba Diver Magazine podcast, where I break down the latest scuba diving news and things that have piqued my interest over the previous week. This week, courts have sided with Netflix in a defamation lawsuit after a movie painted somebody in a rather bad light. A diving destination is in hot water for holding onto divers' deposits and blanking them, stating that they are closed for business, even though their website says otherwise, and the Great Barrier Reef has just experienced its worst coral bleaching heatwave in history that some are describing as an underwater bushfire. So the first news story is US-Cuban freediver Francisco Pippin Ferreras is set to appeal after the defamation lawsuit he had brought against streaming service Netflix was thrown out of court on the 9th of April. He had claimed that the Netflix movie No Limit falsely accused him of the murder of his wife Audrey Mestre on a deep dive. Judge Bruce G. Iwasaki of the Superior Court of L.A. County in California granted Netflix's motion to throw out the lawsuit. He found that although the film claimed to be inspired by real events, the diver, usually known simply as Pippin, who's now 62 years old, had been unable to prove that he was its subject. So, released in September 2022, No Limit deals with fictional freediving couple Pascal Gautier and Roxana Aubrey, and implies that Gautier, jealous of his partner's success, is complicit in her death whilst she is attempting to set a new world depth record. Now, this film was, as they say, inspired by real events, and if you look up Audrey Mestre, she drowned in 2002 whilst attempting a record dive to 171 meters free diving. As her dive supervisor, Pippin, who raised this lawsuit, had carried out final checks on her equipment but had not used a pressure gauge to check the air in the cylinder used to inflate her lift bag for a return to the surface by sled. So basically, Audrey was planning to swim all the way down, you reach the maximum depth, you pull a tag, and then you hold onto a sled and you open up a cylinder valve, the cylinder fills up an airbag, and then you hold onto that sled and that lifts you back up to the surface. So it's a really long way down, but the way back up is a lot faster. There was a scuba diver stationed at her maximum depth who saw Mestre trying to open the cylinder valve, but her sled failed to rise. Subsequent reports by the International Association of Freedivers, or the IAFD, set up and run by Pippin himself, concluded that Mestre's death had been accidental. However, he continued to face intense criticism, most notably in the book The Last Attempt by former business partner Carlos Serra. Pippin claimed that the levels of abuse had soared following the release of the French language film No Limit, so he sued Netflix along with production company Nolita Cinema and the writer-director David M. Rosenthal for defamation and invasion of privacy last March. And of course, the streaming provider raised its own action to reject the suit last November in response. For a time, No Limit was the most popular non-English movie on Netflix. I think you can still watch it on Netflix. And the story is quite recognisable. The character Aubrey, is her last name, goes for a 180-meter No Limit record. It's implied by the filming of Gautier's last minute checks that he knows her air cylinder is empty, so he was knowingly sending her down, or she was going down and he knew that her cylinder was empty, so she'd struggle to get back up. While No Limit doesn't mention Pippin at all, these are all in their mind, like, or in the movie, fictional characters. The film does end with frames showing a photograph of Mestre, accompanied by the words "In memory of Audrey Mestre, 1974 to 2002." Audrey tragically died on October 12, 2002, in the Dominican Republic while attempting to beat the world record at 174 meters. This film remains a work of fiction. Any resemblance to reality is purely coincidental. So Netflix argued that whilst the film was partially inspired by Mestre's story, it was not intended as a literal account of her death. It wasn't a documentary. According to a report on the judge's findings in Variety, they're saying that, no. It's based on or is like inspired, but it's not like a documentary. Rosenthal declared that after watching the 9 for 9, or the Roman numerals IX, No Limits documentary about the fatality, he had researched it further and said that it was also inspired by Le Grand Bleu, which is a Luc Besson 1988 film, inspired by a rivalry between two freedivers, as well as other films and books in the freediving world. Quoting, the film was not intended to depict any particular person, but rather explores my imaginings of how a particularly toxic relationship might unravel in a unique high-pressure environment like the world of No Limit freediving. That was a statement by Rosenthal, who said he had no special insight into the truth of Mestre's death. He obviously wasn't there. Paying tribute to her memory at the end of the film did not indicate that it depicted her life story, he says. The judge kind of disagreed with Rosenthal's contention that No Limits' ending had been rendered more effective dramatically through being intentionally vague, and considered that in the context of the film, Gautier was clearly responsible for Aubrey's death, but he also felt that no reasonable viewer would find that the film portrayed Pippin. The judge considered that many parallels between the movie and Pippin's life story were likely to be common to any freediving film. The abusive and controlling relationship portrayed in No Limit, he felt, bore no relationship to Pippin's own account of a harmonious marriage to Audrey Mestre. Pippin's US legal representative, Alex Rufus Isaacs, who has also sued Netflix on behalf of other individuals claiming to have been unfavorably portrayed in films such as Inventing Anna and The Queen's Gambit, said that with 22 similarities between the characters in No Limit and the true story, quoting, this is one of the strongest libel in fiction cases I've come across. It's kind of one of those things where it's inspired by true events, and yes, the names are pretty similar, and the like scenario as well, incredibly similar. But legally speaking, it's that kind of, well, yeah, no, it was inspired by these events, but and unfortunately, he has been having a lot of blowback, which has obviously brought back a lot of bad memories for him from the time. So we'll see what the appeal process comes forth. In other news, one of Malaysia's best-known scuba diving attractions, the Le Yang Island Resort, is reported to have received a warning from the state authorities following its alleged failure to return deposits made by divers prevented from visiting the location during COVID lockdowns. So, diver Faisal Abdul Rahim has told news outlet SAYS that more than 100 individuals, both from Malaysia and overseas, had lodged 50% deposits with the resort, but had failed to get their money returned or to obtain any response from them. The facility is now officially closed, although its website does not appear to reflect that. You can still book holidays through it, or at least at time of writing this. The 6-hectare Liang Liang in Sabah in Borneo is surrounded by 14 square kilometre atoll, dropping 2 kilometres on its outer fringes. It's also known as Swallow Reef, and the island lies about 300 kilometres northwest of Kota Kinabalu. And it has its own airfield, everything that you need. It was very popular among guests who were able to dive with like hammerhead and reef sharks, manta rays, tuna, barracuda in the area. It was a very, very popular dive site. And in common with many other resorts worldwide, Liang was unable to operate during COVID lockdowns imposed by the government. Quoting, on the 22nd of November 2023, the resort issued a letter stating that its operating license had not been granted, rendering it unable to operate, and declared that all deposits would not be refunded. That's what Rahim told the SAYS. Quoting, in response to this situation, some affected parties sought legal counsel, whilst others pursued resolution through the Tribunal for Consumer Claims. The diver stated that the resort's representatives had avoided all efforts made to serve claim documents at its office, and that of the company secretary as well as the director's home address, they just completely blanked them. Further documents had been sent by registered mail. I mean, I personally had a similar thing. I had a holiday booked, and of course booked it before lockdown and COVID and everything, and then when it was all locked down, I was like, okay, have to cancel. And actually there was a bit of pushback, but yeah, we did end up getting our money back, but these divers clearly haven't, and it's been a few years now. Resort representatives were said to have attended a tribunal hearing in February, although according to Rahim, they had failed to bring required documentation with them and were given 1 month to comply. When they failed to appear at the second hearing in March, the tribunal issued a notice for the company to return all deposited amounts. Quoting, despite our efforts, including waiting for them at the TTPM Kuala Lumpur office and sending emails and making calls, we have received no response, said Rahim. Our resources are exhausted and legal assistance is not readily available for this TTPM case. Describing the resort's actions as unlawful and unethical, he stated, our objective is to inform both Malaysian and non-Malaysian scuba divers that the resort is no longer operating despite its website still accepting bookings. We urge all affected individuals to file claims with TTPM to ensure lawful protection for consumers against irresponsible companies that tarnish Malaysia's reputation. SAYS said it had yet to receive a response from the Liang Liang Resort. Scuba Diver has also asked for comment but received no reply. So yeah, just kind of one of these businesses that just like ditched everything, didn't bother to turn off their website, still accepting bookings and everything. They still got all of these deposits. They still got the money, and now it is just really tricky to like tie them down and actually get that money back. So hopefully they do. And it's a bit of a kind of FYI, if you are looking to book a holiday in Malaysia, if Liang comes up, it's just. Do be careful. Even though they look like they're still operating, they don't seem to be. Further east in Australia, the Great Barrier Reef has been suffering through its worst ever heat stress, with more than 80% of the reefs enduring dangerous levels of heating, according to Australia's Climate Council. Scientists are grappling to quantify the amount of irreparable cumulative damage from repeated such events, says the council, which describes itself as the country's independent, evidence-based organization on climate science, impacts, and solutions. Basing its latest assessment on reports from the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, in the US and other experts, the Climate Council says that the GBR, the Great Barrier Reef, has been subject to greater levels of heat stress than during any of the previous six mass bleaching events. Almost half, about 46% of individual reefs that make up the Great Barrier Reef experience record heat stress, according to analysis of NOAA Coral Reef Watch data, while more than 60% of the individual reefs have shown, quote, prevalent bleaching in the latest Marine Park Authority assessment. Surveys show coral bleaching affecting an area likened in size to the land burning during Australia's 2019-2020 bushfire season, known as Black Summer, according to the Climate Council. Also, marine scientists have reported that coral bleaching has been occurring at greater ocean depths than previously recorded, along with centuries-old corals succumbing to the extreme heat. This is an event in a slow unfolding disaster that is fundamentally altering the reef, states the organization. Repeated mass bleaching events started occurring in the late 1990s due to marine heat waves driven by climate pollution. Every part of the Great Barrier Reef has bleached at least once since then, with some areas bleaching four times with little recovery time. As a result, the Great Barrier Reef is fading to a shadow of its former glory. Which is quite sad. And when you look at the graphs, there's quite a clear linear correlation between the mass bleaching event year and the proportion of reefs impacted by these events. So it's only really going to get worse for them. And more and more like just white bleached corals for one of the most famous reef systems, the Great Barrier Reef. So hopefully eventually we'll find some way to protect it, or at least to regenerate it. There are quite a few coral restoration programs that are working in other areas. Of course, we just need to find a way to make them work out there. It's such a shame, and it is happening all around the world. But yeah, there's a lot of attention on the Great Barrier Reef at the moment. In some nicer news, if you celebrate the May the 4th as Star Wars Day, Oyster Diving and Aquasports have teamed up to host a Star Wars-themed open day on the 4th of May at Mercer's Lake Hadley, located near the M25 and Gatwick Airport. Oyster Diving were recently granted exclusive access to offer scuba diving courses and fun dives at the lake, and they've just launched their own boat that they've named the Blue Pearl to explore various parts of the expansive waterway. In water, divers can glide around an underwater woodland and see lots of fish in glorious visibility. Out of the water, divers can set up in a purpose-built kitting up area, unwind with a warm shower, and chill out après dive in the cafe and licensed bar. Guests will also be able to enjoy discounted tasters of various water sports, including stand-up paddleboarding, canoeing, and sailing, courtesy of on-site providers Aqua Sports. Oyster Diving will be joined by Apex and possibly other diving manufacturers to display their latest products. Demo equipment will be available for qualified divers, and Oyster's sales support team will be on hand for customers with any questions. Divers wishing to get in the water will need to book via Oyster Diving's website, where you can also choose to hire any equipment. Non-divers and well-behaved dogs are very welcome. As well as the water sports, there's going to be music, food, and that licensed bar. The fun starts at 10 a.m, finishes at around 4:30, so you're welcome to come along, wear your finest Stormtrooper or Princess Leia outfit and enjoy the fun. So yeah, May the 4th, and if you search for Oyster Diving here in the UK, and you can have some fun and maybe test out some Apex equipment and maybe some other brands, depending on who signs up for it. As far as dive equipment news, Fourth Element Dive have a win a wetsuit or undersuit of your choice competition going out. I noticed it's on Instagram. They say comment below with which suit you'd love to win, where you'd love to dive in it, and tag who you'd love to dive it with. Don't forget to follow our page for a bonus entry. Follow us on TikTok as well. Entries close GMT midnight, April the 21st, 2024. Winners will be announced on social media from this account on Tuesday, the 23rd of April. Beware of imitators. Do be careful of scams out there. Visit fourthelement.com for terms and conditions. Apex Diving has welcomed Natalie Lasselin as a new ambassador for Team Apex as they mark their 50th anniversary. They say there's no greater fit than a member of the Women Divers Hall of Fame and godmother of the 25th Paris Dive Show. Natalie is a pioneer in underwater exploration and documentary filmmaking. She has explored some of the most remote dive sites, and her documentaries not only showcase the beauty of these environments, but also advocate for ocean conservation. Her dedication to pushing the boundaries of exploration have earned her widespread recommendation. Sticking with Apex, we're starting to see some sizes of the new RK4 fins starting to pop up in some dive centers or on dive shops. Limited sizes. This one, for example, is size large black. They're coming in, I believe, three colors. I think it's black, white, and orange. I'm not sure if they're coming in yellow like the RK3 fins. I could be wrong. But yeah, at the moment, it's not going to be like every single size, every single color. I think it's just going to be drips and drabs as they're readily available. So yeah, if you are a size large and you are digging the black color, then yeah, they seem to be available on some dive sites. I think that's about it as far as dive equipment. I don't remember any other anything else that caught my attention. So on to some Ask Mark questions. The first one comes from Ben Heckendorn, 2696. Ben says, about a month ago, I got my dry suit certification. So I wonder which dry suit would you recommend? I saw the Avatar 101, but when I told the dive center about it, he told me he wouldn't recommend cheap trilaminate. Cheap trilaminate dry suits because you would need to buy another one within 2 years. Really? All right. I thought about a neoprene dry suit since you've got a lot of experience. Which one's best for the fair price? I mean, I love membrane dry suits as long as you're like not scrambling in and out of like really rough environments. They're going to last a lot longer than 2 years, and I wouldn't describe the 101 as a it's not an expensive dry suit, but it's from like the same company like Santee, so the build quality is very, very good. I do like the 101. They've got the 102, the Aeron, whatever the number is, and that's like an upgraded version, so that's quite nice. But if you're looking at neoprene, I used to teach in a waterproof dry suits. That used to confuse a lot of people. That's the brand name. They're not everything they make is waterproof. You got a lot of like waterproof neoprene gloves, and they're like, oh, these are going to keep my hands dry. Nope. But anyway, I use the D10. I think it was like the first generation of D10 before it was called the Draco. That was lovely. I do like waterproof equipment. They have a lot of seams on it, a lot of stitching, but the suit themselves are very well put together. Wasn't a huge fan of the pockets. They had like zippered, what do they call it, like baffle pockets, which, yeah, they kind of bugged me, because when you're trying to undo the zipper, the neoprene would like bend and flex, so it was a bit of a pain to like do up and when you're in the water. But serviceable, got the job done. O3 always come to mind. They make a lot of like commercial diving suits with Endiver as well, Northern Diver. They make a lot of good, inexpensive neoprene dry suits, and you can like customize them. So if you really want to go cheap, you can just get the base suit. But if you also want pockets, you can pick and choose the pockets and all that kind of stuff. So they're usually a good choice. And my buddy, he always used to dive in O3 dry suit. He actually used it for commercial diving. And when it was starting to get a bit tired, is an O3 suit, he wrote to them and said, oh, hey, how can it be like repaired or whatever? And they said, well, if you wouldn't mind like writing a testimonial or whatever you call it about the suit, we'll just give you a new one. So like, okay. And they have a good like work ethic and a good strong suit. So I was pretty close at buying an O3 suit at one point. Northern Diver as well. They also make a lot of good strong like neoprene suits. So yeah, there's a few. It kind of depends where you're from. I think O3 and Northern Diver are both quite British brands. I don't know how widely available they are around the world. But yeah, I'd be looking at them. Waterproof, I think, are a bit more global. Or at least they exist in... or at least they have like dealers in other countries, as far as I'm aware. Otherwise, Scuba Pro is always a good shout. They've got their Exo Dry and their Ever Dry dry suits. They're always very popular. Not the cheapest dry suits out there, but it's Scuba Pro, so it is decent quality. Otherwise, I mean, I'd consider membrane dry suits. I don't think I'd go back to neoprene. They're nice. I mean, I was diving up in the Arctic in one, and yeah, you really don't feel the cold, and you don't need a lot of insulation underneath them. However, they're pretty heavy. You do need more lead to get down. They're nice and tough, so if you brush up against something, you're going to have to really go some to penetrate through all of the neoprene. But as long as you're like relatively diligent, the membrane dry suits are pretty good nowadays. Even some of the budget ones, like the Avatar 101, I'd be very happy diving a 101. I'd revisit it. 391 Wombat says, I see there are some 300 bar carbon fiber cylinders available. Are they suitable for scuba diving? Do you see them at all? Will dive shots fill them, or are they too tough on compressors? 300 bar cylinders, I used to fill up 300 bars. We used to use a Haskell pump. The regular compressor, wouldn't go up to 300 bar. You then had to use the Haskell pump to get it up to that 300. I never found that I got a reliable fill, even when I was doing it myself, filling it up to 300, because it gets like exponentially harder the higher the pressure goes. So by the time you actually hit the water, you're actually like 270 on a good fill. So the benefit isn't that much. As far as carbon fiber themselves, I used to fill up carbon fiber cylinders for the local fire department, and they used to float like balloons. We had these water tanks, which I'm not sure if you're supposed to use anymore, but basically tanks of water that you put the cylinder in whilst you fill it up. There were supposed to be a few benefits of it. I just found that it used to get you wet. It was quite useful for like locating a leak before it got very worse. I did get quite wet quite a few times as an O-ring popped, and then of course it's submerged underwater. You're stood right next to it, and everyone gets wet. The carbon fiber ones, they're lovely and light, so you can pick them up really easily. But they would bob on the surface like a balloon. So I imagine I have seen them on a website, carbon fiber cylinders, and they're made for like scuba diving. And I suppose that the benefit is that that they are a lot lighter, so carrying equipment is a lot easier. However, because they're so much more buoyant than an aluminium and especially a steel cylinder, you need to bring more lead with you to make it sink. So you're kind of offsetting it. It's like, your cylinders are a lot lighter, but your weight belt is a lot more heavy. So I don't really see the benefit. They're also, as far as I'm aware, they're a bit more fragile. They don't like dings and bumps and scrapes and stuff. So you do have to be quite careful with that. And I think they also have limited lifespans, whereas a good like metal cylinder will, like, as long as you keep getting it tested and you look after it, will last until they run out of space on the shoulders to stamp date stamps on it. With a carbon fiber, I think they have definitive like 10-year lifespans or something. I'm not sure in the exact number. I haven't really looked into it, but I think they're quite limited as far as after X years, it just, no one will fill it to whatever pressure. Have a chat with your, if you are looking at 300 bar cylinders, have a chat with your local dive center, because I know at one of the locations, because the dive center I used to work for, we used to have two locations. We had a smaller satellite location. I don't think that could go up to 300 bar. I forget, it was a long time ago now. At the main location, we had the big compressor that would fill up the banks, and then you charge up the cylinder from that. And then you'd have a Haskell pump, which just kind of punched the air into the cylinder up to 300 bar. It used to scare the socks off a lot of people because it makes quite a loud noise. And when you're like standing around cylinders and things, any kind of loud noise is quite scary. Have a chat with your local dive center, see if they can fill up to 300 bar. It can be quite limiting depending on where you're diving. I think I was diving up in the Farne Islands, and they're like, well, we can get it up to 232, maybe. Can't get it up to 300, so you always have like short fills. Bazooka 171 says, could you show me how you merged the orange line with the yellow one? I saw in the video you had some kind of gray tool to link them. This is on the video, how can I leave my DSMB attached to my spool, and it looks like I'm using an Apex Lifeline spool. Bazooka says, I found it interesting in how you use the yellow line to attach the carabiner and secure it and make the spool secure and safe and let the orange dedicated to deploy the DSMB for other use. So with the Apex Lifeline spools, they that's how they come assembled. Apex do it for you. Whilst most spools just use a single piece of like cave line, and then just tie a loop in the end. The loop at the end we call a leader. What Apex did is they put a little metal swivel like you get in like fishing equipment, and they attach the main section of the line is like an orange tape. I forget the name of it. It's a special manufacturer, but that makes it a lot lighter. It's quite easy to control. Like if you get tangles, because it's a flat tape, I just personally find it a lot easier to untangle. And it's bright orange, so it's good to see in all kind of water conditions. And then that attaches to that metal swivel, because a lot of the time the buoy just on the surface will turn and twist the line, which can be a bit of a pain. So the swivel just undoes that, and then that attaches to a separate leader, which is bright yellow, which helps to distinguish it when you're in the water. You know what you're grabbing for. It's made of a round Dyneema line, which is made to be a bit more abrasion resistant. So whatever you're attaching it to, and like tying knots and that kind of stuff, it's gonna put up with a lot more abuse. So it kind of comes that way. I do adjust my spools a little bit just to make it a bit easier. But yeah, that's kind of how it comes basically. I'm sure you could do it yourself if you really wanted to. If you have a look at like fishing spools, I think they're called spools or spindles or whatever it is. You should be able to find it. And yeah, I'm sure you can get hold of the line itself. If you search online, I think I've seen where you can buy a replacement line for it. But yeah, it's nothing special. It's just a fishing like spindle, basically. And that's it for another week. Thank you for listening, everybody. Remember to head over to our website, scubadivermag.com. Check out our magazine, all the amazing things that we do over there. We're very busy planning the Australian Go Diving show. So lots of planning. I don't do a lot of it myself, but I see the chats online about it from the team, and gosh, a lot of work's going into that. So if you are in Australia, it's definitely worth checking out. And yeah, thank you for listening. Remember to like, share, subscribe to all the good social media stuff. Thank you for listening, everybody, and of course, safe diving.